So, without further ado, Carl Sharp and Doyle Rigdon. You have two mics there, you can use them.
I'd rather have this nut on that damn stand.
Hey, let me tell you something. I want to ask you all a question before the show gets any further gone. How in the hell do you follow an act like this? Hey, they're great. So I'm going to open up, and I'm going to give you a Spanish poem called The Border Affair. Spanish is the loving tongue, soft as music, light as spray. 'Twas a girl I learned it from, living down Sonora way. Oh, I don't look much like a lover, yet I say her love words over. Often when I'm all alone, mi amor, mi corazón. Nights when she knew where I'd ride, she'd listen for my spurs. Fling that big door open wide and raise those laughing eyes of hers. And my heart would nigh stop beating when I'd hear that tender greeting whispered soft for me alone. Mi amor, mi corazón. Moonlight on the patio, old Sonora nodding there. Me and Juana talking low, so the madre could not hear. How those hours would go flying. Soon I'd hear her soft voice sighing in that little sorry tone. Adios, mi corazón. Then one night I had to fly from a foolish gambling fight. And we said a swift goodbye in that black, unlucky night. After I'd loosed her arms from clinging, with her words the hoofs kept ringing as I galloped north alone. Adios, mi corazón. Haven't seen her since that night. I can't cross the line, you know. She was Mex and I was white. Hey, that's the way things happen, so. But I've always sort of missed her. Since that last wild night I kissed her, left her heart, and lost my own. Adios, mi corazón. Now, I want you all to appreciate this nice-looking young man here. He's single, girls. And got a good horse. You all remember the song, you know, Sweet Sioux City Sue, I'd swap my horse and a dog for you. You never can tell. He might come up with a black mouth cur to throw in with a dog. But this is Doyle Rigdon, and I met Doyle on the cattle drive in 95. And he told me, he said, I've always wanted to write poetry and recite poetry. And I said, do it. And he has done a magnificent job in 12 years. A magnificent job. And I am proud of him, and I want y'all to give him your attention. Now, he may run longer, more than me. He needs exposure. And y'all remember him. If y'all got a little something, why, you girls go around there, hey, put a lip lock on him.
Just make sure I ain't got no snuff in my mouth. My Uncle Daryl is about one of the lousiest ropers I've ever seen, except for the fact that I'm worse. He's the only person I can see who can throw it ahead and come up with a hind foot every time. I watched him one time. The cow was in a palmetto ledge. Nothing sticking out but her head. How can you miss something like that? He throwed at her head, and to this day, I have no idea how he come up with one foot. But we used to work down at Alico, and we got picked at all the time. And I'm sorry that I can't rope. Seems like there ain't much hope for me to be a world-class roper, but at least I ain't a doper. I like the chase, I like the chance to throw my lariat at something on the ranch. Out in the woods, chasing a hare dick, I'll build my loop like a Will Rogers trick. As fast as I can, which is kind of slow, I'll twirl my loop and throw and throw. And throw and throw until he gets away, or he tires out and I snare him that day. I reckon it's genetic, hereditary, you might say, because my mama's brother, he's the same way. He'll hang his loop out to the side if he's close enough, and if the cow runs in it, well, that's just tough. For the cow, that is, because he's a practical man. He says, out in the woods, it's catch as catch can. You don't get no points for roping them honest, though that's what the guys would admonish. Buck and Ernie catch consistently, and they poke fun at our lack of ability. But for their respect, we'll not beg. That sucker's still caught, even if just by one leg. I remember one time I was we was out there roping a bunch of hairdicks, and for those who don't know the term, that's a cow or a bull that's 2 years old or older and has never been marked or branded. They call them, you know, Mavericks in Texas, Slicks in Nevada, Clean Skins in Australia. We had a bunch of dick cows we was having to rope, and I'd never roped with John Davis before. He was the cow crew foreman on the other cow crew there at Alico, and I happened to see him chasing after one, and I dashed out there going to help him if he caught her, and he had to slow down to get through some myrtles, and I busted on through her, and I got my first throw at her, and I missed. I'm coiling up my rope, and here he comes, and he throws at her, and he missed. I throw again, and I missed. Finally, she turns to fight, which is how I like them. I can catch them when they stopped. If they coming at me, I can catch them. If they running away, hang it up. If I catch it, it's just pure D luck. But anyway, old John was getting ready to throw his rope. I throwed and missed. She's standing right here. From me to that woman, I throwed and a miss. And John's throwing his rope, and she's getting ready to charge us. And directly, my loop's down there, and I'm saying, step in the rope. Step in the rope. And she stepped just right, and I snared her. And he looked at me and said, now that's bull. He said, if you by yourself, you catch him however. But if you got help, you better rope him right. But there's not many hairdicks left. But it's still a lot of fun to rope whenever we get a chance. You never have to tell a cowboy twice to jerk down his rope, not if he's worth anything, because he's going to be right there with you. But I realize that having hairdicks on a place may seem to most as something of a disgrace, a sign that someone isn't much of a hand because they can't gather all the cattle from their land. But there's always going to be an outlaw, a wild one, that when it sees a horse, its instinct is to run. And when you've done everything you can do, from dogging to trapping to riding the hammocks through, there comes the time anticipated by cow hunter folk when your only alternative is to rope and choke. When a bull throws up his head, your blood begins to race. He pulls out and then starts the chase. The adrenaline's a-pumping as you fly across the ground. The horse's hooves beating speeding cadences on the earth they pound. Pegged out, as fast as you can go, jumping obstacles and dodging diller holes. Closer and closer, homed in on your prey, when you see your buddy miss and the bull pulls away, heading for the high ground of his hammock lair. When you close in and you throw your snare, the loop slices through the air and lands true, while your buddy wishes he'd caught him and not you. You pull up and wait for the jerk, and you think to yourself, man, I love this work.
I'm used to working with wireless mics, and I'm looking at the crowd, and I love every one of you, and I'm thankful to be here. At my age, I'm thankful to be anywhere, but I want to share one with you, and don't choke on it until I get into it, and the name of it is AARP. As of late, there has been a modest debate concerning the wearing of furs. And some even swears anybody who wears is flawed in their character. But others will fight to maintain the right to wear what they dang well please. But the answer lies in a compromise that sets both minds at ease. Imagine two friends at opposite end who meet to do lunch once a week. And their friendship is tried when they gather outside that Beverly Hills boutique. Sophie, oh my soul, is that a mink stole? Please tell me it's fake from Goodwill. No, Babs, it's a mink, but it's not what you think, because it's designer roadkill. Oh, surely you scoff, but don't blow it off. It's the wisdom of Solomon's voice. The perfect solution, it grants absolution and gives the owner pro-choice. And wisdom so pure should forever endure and percolate into your soul. So I'm the head jack of the Animal Accident Recovery Patrol. Now, the AARP, which is Hank Mattson and me, we're out on that road every night to gently remind you this mess left behind you is more than a buzzard's delight. So carry a trowel for mammal or fowl to collect your vehicular blooper. In time you will find yuck is just in your mind. It's no worse than a pooper scooper. And you'd be amazed how activists praise you for doing what you think is right. And no trapper will object if you stop to collect things that go bump in the night. So treat it with care. Harm not a hair. Be sorry, but don't sit and pine, cause accidents happen when you're both overlapping that yellow center line. So salvage your plunder and render that blunder into a warm winter coat. And remember our motto, which you know you ought to, and it follows as herein I quote. Make it a habit to pick up your rabbit. Don't leave him to dry in the sun. For the sake of a garment, recycle that varmint. It's tacky to just hit and run. And let me tell you something. Doyle and I have experienced it. You know, we don't like to see people get up and leave. But we'd rather see them, as Doyle says, I'd rather see them get up and leave than get up and come at us. Hey, let me tell you something. This lovely lady that got up here to introduce me, she's from Miami. And bless her, she's such a sweetheart. It's, I'm ashamed to really tell you about it, but outhouse. Hey, that girl's got 11 rooms and 4 baths. But in my youth, I had 2 rooms and a path. And Daddy built that outhouse on the bank of Fish-Eating Creek, and then every time I passed that outhouse, I had the urge to push it in. For months, I fought that powerful urge. But one day, I was weak. I went out to the outhouse, and I pushed it in the creek. That night, my dad called me aside, just had one thing to say. Hey, boy, do you know who pushed the outhouse into the creek today? I told my dad it was I. He didn't even chide, but then and there, with leather belt, prepared to tan my hide. But, Dad, I cried, when George Washington cut down that cherry tree, he told his dad the truth, and he let George go free. One more question, son, my dad said with a frown. Was George's daddy in that tree when George cut it down? Hey, I'm gonna let Doyle hit a licker here. I'm just aggravating you people, but more especially, I'm aggravating him.
They really couldn't believe it. Although he seemed sincere, this New York Yankee that come to work one year. He grew up with Westerns, watching Gene and Roy. Told him all his life he wanted to be a cowboy. He knew of Del Vecchio, the bull rider from the Bronx. He listened to country music and had gone to honky-tonks. From an online auction, he'd bought a used saddle and 2 or 3 books on the different breeds of cattle. Why he'd come to Florida, no one could rightly say. They figured he'd have headed west to learn the cowboy way. He told them all he wanted work of his lifelong dream to ride the range as part of a cattle-gathering team. The foreman was dubious. It was calving season. Normally, to hire a new man, they wouldn't see a reason. But the Yankee was in luck, because Bill had just quit, and the foreman had no choice but to see if he would fit. Well, he couldn't use a whip, and he didn't know how to rope. After hours of teaching, well, the cow crew gave up hope. They asked if he could ride, and the Yankee said, of course. and so he sat astraddle of a thoroughly broken horse. Their cracker speech was a foreign tongue to his pale northern ears, and his Queensborough language pattern was subject to taunts and jeers. Of course he understood English, this Yankee wasn't dense, but in the air between them there existed a verbal fence. The foreman took him on his round and at a hammock's edge, instructed him to ride south to a palmetto ledge, for him to ride through it, to cut through the cabbage trees, skirt through the cypress, and to watch out for the knees. West from the cypress, ride to a pine head, watch for the ditch lizard, your horse don't like the dead. There's a hammock near the cow pens, we'll meet the other side. The cow crew foreman left him there, and the Yankee started his ride. The terms the boss had used concerned the Yankee some. He worried about falling off when to the ledge he'd come. Abruptly stepping off an edge vexed his fearful soul. His horse scared him half to death when he stepped into a bull hole. As he rode along further, there was blowing a cool breeze, and he contemplated thoroughly what kind of cabbage grew in trees. Though he didn't know it, he come through where the foreman said, and searched the area expectantly to see a giant head. An ancient sight, a totem pole, he expected to behold, like something off of Easter Island, a Seminole relic of old. But he never saw the head. He just rode into a stand of pine. He come upon a cattle trail and followed where it led. Ditch lizard puzzled the man. He thought to ask them later. While ruminating upon this term, he never saw the gator. His horse's nose caught the stench and launched him in the air. He impacted swiftly with the earth, his arm in prickly pear. A string of cuss words left his mouth, poetically it seemed. The art of such vulgarity has every sailor dreamed. Concluding his obscenities, he retrieved the final spine. As Gopher come upon the scene, returning Yank's equine. The Yankee mounted sheepishly and continued on his way, muddled still by the terms, his thoughts in disarray. Bewildered though he was sure he'd recognize a hammock hanging in the air between the earth and skies. But he saw no hammock, just some trees and cattle all astir, and around the cows he plainly seed where the cowmen were. When Yank joined them round the herd, Jim saw a pregnant cow. She had tried to calve. Hooves were out. She needed helping now. Well, Gopher roped and choked her. Jim went to tail her down. And it was here that what occurred gave the Yank renown. A simple word assailed his ears. He didn't have to fake. He understood implicitly its meaning, no mistake. Jim had hollered, "Mug the cow." The Yankee pulled his knife. Looked at her with gritted teeth, your wallet or your life.
Y'all don't have any idea. I'm going to share it with you. Me and this fella have spent some nights beside the fire. And we have laughed and had some times. And he's a fine young man, and I'm proud of what he's done. And I want him to continue and do what he's doing. You know what I mean? Now, we've got some nice young people here. And children sometimes get left out. But I'm not going to leave them out. I'm going to include them. And you all have the misfortune of having to listen to me at the same time. Frisbee. A frisbee is a modern toy, but what you might not know, hell, they've been around forever, along with rocks and sticks to throw. Have you ever seen a tomcat that has used up all of his lives? He's flatter than a fritter, and he's drying out real nice. And if the tail is still attached, and most of the time they are, then a kid can throw that kitty and sail him just as far. And if the dog should catch him and chew him up a mite, it just adds a little character and promotes a speedy flight. The game is more exciting because these girls are sure to scare with yellow eyes and a flapping tail on a frisbee made of hair. Now, us country kids been making do with nothing much at hand. For fun, we'd ride them yearling calves. Now, that will test your sand. We'd take them cattle to the field there to let them roam, and mid flashing, flinging rocks and dashing hoofs, we'd race them horses home. But occasionally at milking time, we'd arm ourselves with sticks, and flinging gobs of fresh cow dung was a favorite pastime trick. And you could plan on a fist fight or a comparable kind of wreck about the time that that warm goo went sliding down his neck. We'd watch him hens laying eggs. 'Twas relaxing and real nice. Then we'd poke them back where they come from and watch them lay them twice. Yeah, us country kids made our own fun. Build a swing, tree house, or boat. Climb a tree, rob a bird nest, or maybe turpentine the goat. But for a real hoot at a playing catch or at a throwing match, just search that highway till you find you a flattened frisbee cat. She cussed me from side to side, and then from head to toe. She used every word I knew and some I didn't know. But I just tipped my hat and smiled at her polite. I didn't even argue, 'cause by golly, she was right. You know, we come up with all this off-the-wall stuff, but we enjoy it, and it kind of relates. It'll tie in with things that we have to do. Now, he's not here. Y'all may not know it, but me and Bob Stone, we're in the cow business together. And we bought this grand prize muley bull just to give our herd some class. But that lazy thing just rolled its eyes whenever a cow would pass. So me and Bob rode into town to see the vet, explained to him our problem, and asked what we could get. Now, he mixed up a potion, and we drenched that bull down good. Next spring, every critter dropped a calf, just like the veterinarian said he would. And I turned to Bob. I said, "What was that stuff the veterinarian sent?" And Bob Stone said, "I don't know, but it tastes like peppermint." And if you think that me and this esteemed young man to my right don't enjoy what we do. And the funniest thing about it is, we love having you here. But if it's just the two of us, we laugh at each other. We're going to have life is like a ballroom. Seriously speaking, life is like a ballroom. If you hear a song you like, don't metaphor it, dance to it. Don't metaphor it, dance to it. I'm going to leave you with, we see things and it goes on, but with a little old game today that's almost missing. It's called quality control. Now, I'm old enough to remember when things were made good. And back in the days when we lived different ways, things that you bought were half decent. Machinery worked good like you knew that it would, but it don't if it's made fairly recent. If you look on the back of that new Cadillac or the mowing machine that you ordered, the parts are all made by the Japanese trade and it's assembled down south of the border. The iron in the field don't have the right steel, feel, and a warranty book can't be trusted. In less than a week, it'll rattle and squeak, and in a month's time, something's busted. Well, I've given some thoughts to what's good and what's not, and considering all things together. Old trucks are all right. Gloves that fit tight. 8 ends and things made of leather. Pulled Herefords are good if you breed like you should, and some horses and dogs okay. But like I said before, what you buy at the store damn sure is temporary today. I want you all to know that we are really desperate here. in the state of Florida. And I have to assume, since this is a weekend affair, that most of you are making your home in Florida now. May not be from here originally. But a cowboy's favorite thing. You've got no idea, but I'm going to tell you. When a man spends his life on horseback and the country is his home, there are some things he learns to love as across the range he roams. The scent of burning cedar, a rhythmic windmill's creak, song of a friendly mockingbird and sunshine on his cheek, the smell of boiling coffee, a lonesome panther's call, the smell of sweaty horse flesh, and a lost calf's mournful bawl. Light from a kerosene lamp, the early flowers in spring. These are but a few of a cowboy's favorite things. But there is one thing that a cowboy loves more than all the rest, which makes him glad to be alive, and it puts strength in his breast. And it's not the song that the fiddle plays or the money in his jeans. It's not a brand new pair of boots or a pot of pinto beans. It's a promise from the foreman that rules that range on high that the cows will once more fatten and the short grass will not die. It's the smell that every cowboy loves, regardless of the season. It's the sound that chases frowns away, regardless of the reason. It's a simple thing that fills his life with peace from crib to cane. The life that brings life to his home, the sound and smell of rain. And we desperately need it, desperately need it. She done told me that Dole only had 30 more minutes to go. Oh, whatever, sweetheart. Are you ready to shut this thing down? One more? You want to do it?
I'll do it.
Do it.
You want a story? Hang on a minute, and let me tell you about Beezer Bennett. Now, Beezer was a cowman many years ago. How he got the name Beezer, I don't know. He surely was a character, kind of like Bone Mizell, and something of a legend, just like William Tell. Now, there's another fella who's important to this story, and that's Beezer's saddle partner, old Porky Corley. The pair worked for Likes Brothers way back in the day, when drinking on the job was the cowhunter way. In fact, Beezer could ride into a hammock as sober as a saint and come out the other side drunk as a haint. This feat was simple, as you can see, because Beezer had a bottle in nearly every tree. They liked their liquor, did he and Porky Corley, which brings to mind a drinking story. Off to Arcadia went this intrepid pair, drinking shine that'd curl your hair. They had them a time, painted the town, then headed for the bunkhouse, drunk as Cooter Brown. They was traveling along, feeling no pain, when they had them a flat, the motorist's bane. They stumbled out, three sheets to the wind, they fixed their flat and then went on again. Well, they drove and drove, the night wore on. Before they knew it, it was coming on dawn. Well, they looked at each other. They should have been there, back at the bunkhouse instead of nowhere. But they kept driving, passing the Who Hit John. When Porky says to Beezer, "What's going on?" Beezer says, "I don't know. We're way past town." Porky looked out the window. "Dang it, Beezer, you didn't let the jack down." That's a true story, too. Thank you very much. Y'all have a good evening.
Don't run off, folks, but we might have to move some chairs back a little bit. We're going to have the roping contest right here on the stage.